the Age of Vision radio show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. From 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV radio. We relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision radio show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with Age of Vision radio show. Thank you for joining us. Today I have with us, we're putting on a little pre-recorded interview here with Sean McGee from nuclearnews.net. He's one of the editors. And I'm going to get right into it because we have some exclusive news. It's a story that was written by Sean, posted March 29th, 2018, so just a couple days ago. I have to confess I had not seen it until right before the show, so I'm going to ask Sean to go through it. The title is called Novichok A234, The Facts, exclusive to nuclearnews.net. So thank you, Sean, for joining us.
Oh, it's great to be back again. How are you keeping? Everything all right?
Yes, actually, I'm actually doing quite well. I'm really improving, to be honest.
Oh, good stuff. Good stuff.
How about yourself?
Well, I've had an interesting few days. I put this Novichok article up and got seriously hacked.
Really?
Wow. Yeah. Well, as soon as I put it up, the whole computer crashed and went down. And I had to do some fixing on the, because I've got Linux and Ubuntu. I know I had to do a bit of repair work on it to get it working again. And by the time I got back online, then basically I was all right for about 12 hours, 16 hours. And I was sharing some research to a peace group, sort of based in Ireland. And they turned around, they said, thanks a lot. And then my computer crashed again. I only did a few posts. So, but I think just before we start, I should point out that, what's happened in the UK because of this Novichok biological attack or chemical attack, actually, in Salisbury. The UK is just not saying anything about it at all. When Litvinenko was poisoned with polonium 210, of course they had pictures of him, and it was it was kind of a big thing. But on this occasion, they haven't let anybody go anywhere near, near the actual people. There's no pictures like we had of Litvinenko. So basically it was, and that's nearly a decade ago. So when we're coming up to date, they've just slapped a thing of secrecy on it. And of course everybody's wondering, this Novichok, it must come from Ukraine. And So what's happened is that because the UK has said, oh, well, it could only have come from Ukraine. It can only come from Russia. And because of that, of course, they've gone around to all of Europe and, of course, the US as well. Obviously, they've got a bee in their bonnet about Russia for some reason. I don't know why. And they basically turned around. Well, I do know why. They basically turned around and they've obviously expelled, 120 or 30 diplomats from various countries, from 20-odd countries.
Yeah.
They actually did one the other day from Ireland. They sent one out of Ireland. And we're supposed to be a neutral country. So there's a lot of people in Ireland that are quite angry about that because there's no evidence being given to people, you know, because obviously you would expect the UK to go, look, well, here we've got this breakdown of the chemical, you know, and all these chemicals would have a signature. And
well,
we'll
that's
go through
what
that.
We're being told in the States is that that's how they know it's Russia, because this chemical has a signature and only Russia has it.
Well, actually, that's not what we're told in the UK. What we're told in the UK, that it's highly likely, and the rest of Europe as well, by the way, that it's highly likely that it's Russian. And the reason they know that is because it was developed in Russia. But, and here's the bit that people haven't discussed, and this is why I did my article. The fact is that I think it was in the 70s, 80s, they turned around and they Russia fell. And when it did, the scientists that were working on this went to America. And one of the main guys that did it went to America, did a book, put the chemical equation in the book, and then basically you can get that on Amazon, and you can get it on Kindle for about €4. It's about $5. And that's been, you know, I don't know, I presume it's still available on Amazon. But it wouldn't matter anyway, because you can find the chemical composition in other places. And so what I did, I thought, well, I can't afford to buy the Kindle version, because I'd have to buy a Kindle book as well. So I just went online and I found a blog, basically, a forum of chemists who were discussing it. And they were discussing it between, when was it? It was 2006 or 7, all the way through to 2012. They had the thread going, you know. And they were discussing it, and they were trying to work out, what it was, and you know, all the rest of it. And because they were chemists, they were interested in the science behind it. So anyway, I was sort of reading through that. They'd done a lot of deleting of other comments, which were just lots of spam and that. But I got through the whole thing. And it was very interesting. And I thought I'd take some notes from that forum. Now, I didn't link to it on Nuclear News because I just thought, you know, it is still available. And
you mean to the forum?
Yeah, I didn't link to the forum. So basically on my Facebook, there is a link to it. And I put it there so that Chris Busby can
Facebook
have a look.
And your Facebook page is Sean.
Yeah.
Arclight.
But anyway, keep it quiet.
Oh, we're not supposed to say that. Sorry. S-E-A-N, by the way.
Yeah. That's S-E-A-N Arclight. Yeah. That's the Facebook version of my name, Sean, as opposed to S-H-A-U-N, which is my real name. But anyway, so what we did is, I went through it and had a look at it. And I'll just break down some of the notes. So what happened was, right, okay, I broke it down to about seven points, and I had an extra point put in because I just wanted to mention the poisoning of Litvinenko about 10 years or so ago.
Can I ask you a question? Has anybody...
Sure.
Why was this, if they did it, what would be their reasoning? From my understanding... This person was living in England for a long time, had settled into his life as an expat, basically.
Yeah, and he was a spy. He was an active British agent.
He was an active spy.
There's all sorts of things going on about, you know, what he might have been doing recently, but he was a spy in Russia for about 10 years. He's a Russian national, but he spied for the British.
But I thought he was retired. No longer part of the service.
To be honest with you, there's 300,000 Russian emigres that live in London. I think there's people that are on the run from Russia because they've murdered people. I don't think there's too many of those, but there's others that have been on the run because they did the dodgy and they got chased out when Putin did his when Russia fell. The Americans went there and they got them to join the IMF and the Americans introduced the neoliberal model, financial model. What happened? Certain people managed to take over. They'd buy Gazprom. That was bought for a couple of dollars. There's all those sort of things going on, and then you found a very small handful. Maybe a few hundred or a few thousand guys that managed to make an absolute mint, because they were just given these
neoliberal agenda. That's the model. Mission accomplished.
So they were doing that. And then, of course, you had Yeltsin and you had Gorbachev. So there's a lot of corruption and it was really dodgy. Literally, if you were in Russia, you'd have to have bodyguards. So basically what they did is Putin came along and he kind of sorted it out. He basically cleared all the unfairness and disparage. I mean, there was a guy that went around Russia at the time and he was doing a book and he was going into all the towns. And he said, like, he'd walk into a town and just people would be totally broke and, they'd be getting a bit of money and they'd just buy a load of vodka. And, you go to these towns and they were basically drunk skunks.
Yeah.
He was just tracking around on a motorbike. And he said, like, the people, and he was with a friend, and he said people would just be so drunk and, there was a real, they had hardly any food and they were living off potatoes and all the rest of it. And it was really kind of bad times. So when Putin came along or around about that time, they started going after people that were sort of...
Cleaning up the riffraff,
all the mafia sort of guys that, you can't blame the Russians. They were just trying to survive, it was quite a terrible time for them, people were relying on the state, because it was a communist country, and then that was just pulled out from under them, and then they just had to somehow survive, so this guy was going around. I actually met him. He said he was going around. He said it was dire. It was really, really, really dire. And so basically Putin came along, started getting things organized a bit more, obviously a lot of the guys that were doing dodgy stuff, some of the mafia guys that were being a bit outrageous, they made a lot of money, and then they thought, right, we'll get out of Russia, and they all came to London, because at the end of the day, London was an easy place to take dirty money to. And in fact, actually, there was about 2 days ago, a foreign affairs committee. And it was quite funny, actually, because I actually watched it. It was about 2 hours worth. And they were sitting there and they were going, well, all this money coming in, did we just sort of turn a blind eye to it? And they said, well, basically, no, we did. We sort of encouraged it.
Yes, we did, actually.
Yeah.
we want to say no, but we really did.
Yeah. And, wow. we encouraged it. And in fact, actually, they were saying that, as of a couple of days ago, they were saying that there was still money coming in from Russia for up to, they reckoned it was a billion pounds a month. Wow. So, you know, it's just over a billion or whatever. So that was coming in every month, without fail. And as the money came in, you know, the bank, the City of London would put it in. You know, there's a lot of people making a lot of money off it. And in fact, actually, you know, politicians were getting looked after by these very wealthy Russians. And there wasn't a problem, you know. But that was quite an interesting meeting. You know, it was actually called the Foreign Affairs Committee. And it was on about Russian corruption. but they had I think it was three investigative journalists and an ex-banker who basically was sort of saying, well, you know, we should stop this. But then they said, well, what happens if we do stop it? What will happen in the UK? and then they changed the subject. And then they were the investigative journalists were talking about the fact that a couple of people, he mentioned Tory politicians, but they did say that there were some Labour politicians that got the money as well. But they were getting money and bungs from the Russians living in the UK. And so basically they named a couple of names, and then the chairman went, oh, stop that. Because if they talk about it in the Foreign Affairs Committee,
wow.
Then the press can go and publish right. those names.
Right.
Now they didn't at all. Yeah. So obviously they clamped down on it. Said no, you can't talk about this.
Wow.
And they were saying, oh, well, should we ban RT? You know, Russia Today. And they said, well, if they do that, then they're just going to kick out all the BBC correspondents we've got in Russia. And, of course, I suspect that a lot of those guys are working for MI5 or MI6, I should say. So basically they sort of that line of talk sort of stopped.
but don't you think that is the natural progression of it, though?
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's kind of some of the background to this Novichok story, because now you've got Theresa May and the PR companies right. and the media and all this saying, oh, well, no, Putin, and they actually said this in the Foreign Affairs Committee. They said, well, look, Putin is like a king, and he gives money, because they were saying, is it Putin's money that's in London, in England, in the city? And he didn't really answer that. All he said was that, well, no, Putin gives people money and he takes it away, depending on you know. So it's like,
well,
Putin
what we
has
hear in
the
money. States is that Putin gets a piece of all the money in Russia.
Yeah, it's called tax, you know. Yeah. But I at the end of the day, it's I don't know how he's funded or whatever, and I'm pretty sure
this is a really ridiculous thing. I mean, honestly, they're. They're complaining about him acting like a king, and look what's happened, at least in our country. It's just so beyond outrageous. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, to be honest, there's a word called xenophobia.
Yep.
Okay. And the problem with xenophobia, you target one group or whatever, so in this case it's the Russians, and it's so easy to expand that. And then, you know, I mean, I have to say, you know, we're looking at the age of McCarthy. I think we've talked about it in the past. And, you know, that seems to be coming back in. Well, that has come back, actually, in America, you know, from what I can see. But
this is the thing about it. Like, I am just dumbfounded, John. The common theme here is just the denial. Like, I don't know. It's like... It's not just the xenophobia, it's everything. They expect us to click our heels and say, Sieg Heil. I mean,
yeah, well,
quite frankly, like this this chemical agent, like reading through your article, you know, real briefly, you said, I want to talk about it. And I was like, oh my gosh. I mean, this chemical is pretty serious, but you're saying that there's no proof that it really is from the Russians. They're saying it's from the Russians, but there's really no proof.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, the Organization for Chemical Weapons, the UN body, they're basically going to turn around and they're going to test it. Now, it's going to take them 3 weeks. Now, it's obviously everybody's saying, well, how could the UK have know that it was Novichok at such an early stage? And I'm going to tell you how they knew, because I read this forum, you know, and they were talking about issues. Well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll go through the 8 points that I've got, which are relevant to this discussion. I'll just read them out because they're pretty short.
Okay, great.
And then maybe we can discuss it. But all right. So what this Novichok, what they were saying basically is that it can be as a militarized organophosphate. Right, now this is basic organophosphate. This is what they use fertilizer for. So fertilizer can be used to make explosives, and it can be used also to poison people. So now the fact is that the big agriculture companies, you know, they turn around and they'll if we said basically that we're not going to have this product anymore, you know, available to people, then that would be kind of neat, wouldn't it? There would be no. I think one of your buildings got blew up by McVeigh, was it? And he used a fertilizer bomb.
That's
was it?
Right. I think. That's right.
Okay. Well, it's the same stuff, you know. Oh, and okay. So, and all you've got to do is process it with some chemicals. It's a bit tricky. I think you have to be what they call a synthetic chemist, okay, to be able to create this. But it sounds like. Because you get different types. I think it can be made into a gas, a fine powder, or into a sticky oil. Now, I think a fine powder one, that sort of militarized fine powder, because they'd have to have nanoparticles, so it'd be really, really hard to synthesize that. Okay, and it'd be harder to control as well. It sounds like it was put onto a door handle or something, and the guys just opened the door handle, and maybe his daughter's touched the door handle or touched his hand or something, because she's actually seems to be recovering now. And so
you think it's just as simple as like putting it on a door handle?
Yeah,
him die. Yeah. Is he dead? Did he die?
Well, there's nothing about him at the moment. His daughter, who also got ill, basically she seems to be recovering. And I think
he was brain dead. He's not a machine, but he's brain dead.
Well, they said that about both of them.
Yeah.
You know, they said they were in a coma basically. Huh. So. the bottom line there is that, you know, if isn't it, but anyway, all of a sudden, his daughter it seems to be recovering. So, but we'll come to that anyway. So anyway, I suspect it was the oil version, and the oil version I would suspect is the easiest one to synthesize, you know, because you make it into an oil, and then if you want to make it into a fine powder or a gas, you have to do other processes.
Yeah.
But, okay, so that's point number one. Point number two is new nuclear biological and chemical NBC suits. So they're suits that are worn to stop for chemicals. Yeah, they were actually developed before Desert Shield, right? So after the fall of the Russian the Soviet Union. These scientists went to Porton Down in the UK and to America. And that they must have made this particular chemical so that they could test the suits out. Because they had to make new suits, because the old this particular Novichok was basically created to get around the old nuclear chemical and biological warfare suits that they had. They're called I'm just going to call them Noddy suits, because that's the military slang term for it. Just a bit easier to say. So
the
these naughty
military slang name was naughty suits.
No, noddy, noddy.
Noddy.
N-O-D-D-Y. N-O-D-D-Y. Noddy. Noddy suits.
Why do they call them that?
It's just a slang. There's a few noddy. Different
things I'll go called. With it. Okay.
But anyway, so the old ones that were done, you know, prior to the Soviet Union falling, that you know, if there was a chemical, biological or chemical attack or a nuclear attack, they'd put these suits on, put the mask on, and they they'd run around, and basically it was you know, they'd be protected for a certain period of time, and. But this Novichok, basically, it was able to either soak into the suits or get around the suits in some way, and it rendered the masks, so it rendered them you know, useless against this particular chemical agent. So what happened then was that they developed a new suit, and it was ready by the time of Desert Shield in Iraq. You know, the first Iraq war, if you like. So anyway, so these new suits that they'd developed by then, they would have had to have Novichok, right, in America and in the UK to be able to test the suits out. They'd have had to put somebody in a suit at some point and a mask, stick them in a room, and then spray them with this Novichok to see if they would stay alive or not.
You don't That's think they the would have tested with something similar, like that they had it?
No, because it had to be Novichok, because that Novichok was specifically developed to circumnavigate the you know, the NATO Noddy suits at the time. So they came up with new Noddy suits and new gas masks, which were resistant to Novichok. Yeah, so and that was ready before Desert Shield. So we know that the UK and the US had them. Now I've heard them deny it. I've heard them deny that there was that they had any of these tests. They said, "Oh, we got rid of it in the 80s and all this sort of stuff. We wouldn't have it." But they must have had it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they wouldn't have the new suits. You know, and these new suits had to be developed before the invasion of Iraq, because from there, what they were saying, that he had chemical agents. Well, Novichok was the chemical agent, which you could, you know, basically go on Amazon or whatever and buy a book, and you get your Iraqi guys to synthesize this stuff. Now, you know, at the end of the day, that obviously never happened, because we now know that he didn't have, you know, Saddam Hussein didn't have these chemical agents, you know, but they were saying he did, so they had to prepare for it, you know. And in fact, actually, in where was it? It was in Kuwait at the time. A battalion of nuclear and biological and chemical warfare specialists, you know, soldiers, were sent to Kuwait, right, to protect them, right, from Ukraine. So that's another thing. Now, this is after the fall of the Soviet Union, so that those guys were working for the alliance, you know, for NATO, basically. Mm-hmm. So anyway, the next thing that you probably want to know is that obviously, how did they know so quickly that Novichok was basically a thing? You know, how do they know that the Skripals were hit with it? Well, the fact is that they had while they were developing the Noddy suits, they were also developing how to test for this chemical. Okay, and then basically, not only did they do that, but they also came up with a treatment for the Novichok.
Mm-hmm.
So, which kind of makes the point they're saying that, because they started off initially and they're saying, like, oh, 12 people could have been, you know, sort of a dozen or so people could, you know, might have been contaminated. Well, they weren't, but they might have been. And the report was that people were phoning up saying, oh, could it, you know, could I have had it? And they said to the hospital, and they went in for tests and they didn't have it. They were advised to get their clothes clean just in case, which, you know, is ridiculous. That wouldn't get rid of this Novichok.
On a note, but anyway, if you don't think it was the Russians who did it, who did it, and for what reason?
Well, I don't know. I wouldn't like to say if it wasn't or was, but I'll go through a couple of theories as well at the end of this. But anyway, so we know, so the UK at the moment is saying that, not admitting that they could test for it straight away, and they're not saying that they've got any treatment for it straight away, because if they did that, then they'd have to admit that they've got it, yeah? So they don't want to do that, you know? Anyway, that's beside the point, but that was just a little fact that came out of the story that I was reading. Anyway, the next thing was that it was, basically there was an antidote, there was very likely that there was an antidote was developed, and that was also prior to Desert Shield. So that might explain why the Scribble's daughter and the policeman are recovering. And it may give some hope that Mr. Scribble, the father, will also recover. But, you know, so we're not hearing anything. So it sounds to me that the UK is ramping up the danger. They actually said, the last report I said, is that they said that there could have been up to 200 people at risk. So, you know, and that was how they got all of the European countries to actually chuck out these Russian diplomats, right?
Yeah, you know, I get you. I mean, it's a clear propaganda program. I mean, it's really obvious.
Yeah, it was a strategy. Anyway, yeah. That's, yeah. You know, and to be honest, you know, if the Russians did that, well, then the Russians deserve a bit of a tap on the wrist for doing it. It's very dodgy to do that, you know, but if it wasn't, then, oh, dear, you know. But, well, you know, hopefully we may find out. Anyway, the next point was that they basically turned around. I'd already made this point, actually, that making all references to Novichok series a matter of national security, that they wouldn't basically have to give any information of any technical detail. And then they say, look, here's the OPCW, and you're going to take 3 weeks to come up with your report, or even a couple of months, they've started saying now, which is ridiculous, because they knew within days by you doing this test. But obviously, to find out the exact chemical composition, to track where it came from, might take a few months. Well, but I don't think so. I think it would take a couple of weeks. They'd have a pretty good idea. And I'll come back to that in a minute. So then basically there was 70 to 90 Russian peer-reviewed studies before the fall of the Soviet Union. And what they did is that they didn't say, oh, we've got this, militarized organophosphate. What they said is that they've got organophosphate in the peer-reviewed studies. And they were saying it was a fertilizer or an insecticide or whatever, you know. And then the seventh point I brought in was that it isn't easy to make. So you've got, sodium dioxide, and I think that's quite reactive and nasty, you know. And there's other bits that are quite reactive and nasty that you add to this potash, basically. And what have you. And basically, you would have to have a synthetic chemist who knows what he's doing in a lab to do it. But you know, that's any synthetic chemist worth his salt, and in a lab that's designed for synthetic chemistry. You know, which there is loads of.
This story, I have heard repeatedly that only the Russians have it, and only the Russians know how to make it. That's the news I've heard.
According to this forum in 2000, they were discussing this between 2007, I think, roughly, to 2012, when was the last post. They were discussing it then. And they were talking about all the things that I've just talked about. So that's how I know what I know. So the last point, which, you know, because they also say, well, you know, they've done it before. And this guy, Litvinenko, he was poisoned with polonium-210. And And then basically, you know, that could only be produced in Russia, you know, and it's really rare. That's, you know, polonium-210, you know, that's it's not that rare. But I was talking with Chris Busby, who's saying, well, you just get some radium tubes and dials and stuff and you mash them all down, do some chemical stuff, and you get enough polonium-210 to kill someone, you know. Yeah. But there is another theory to that, and we can discuss that as well. But the bottom line is, though, is that, you know, once again, and the other thing was, though, that the chemical analysis of the polonium-210 that poisoned Litvinenko was never released. You know, if you want to go on the internet and try and find it, you won't find it. And of course, why not? You know, because at the end of the day, it's not like that. We don't know what polonium-210 is, you know, but what we'd want to know is what other bits are with that polonium-210, right, that might let us know where it's from.
Yeah,
you know.
Sean, don't you think there's just a general disregard for all the nuclear contamination, like general across the board? You know, maybe the studies are coming out, like. Honestly, we don't need more studies. We need them to actually put some science into stopping it or remediating it, or like it just.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, there was another case of polonium-210 poisoning, and I'm pretty sure that wasn't Russia, and that was actually who was it? Oh, what's that? The famous Palestinian. You know the guy I'm on about. I think everybody out there and were screaming it into the YouTubes. It'll come to me anyway. So the leader of the Palestinian, the PLO, yes. When he died, it was suspected that he had polonium poisoning.
Yes, and his body and found it there.
Well, you see, that there was a huge, big thing about that. And then they were saying, oh, no, that's not right. And there was big delays to get it done. And, of course, we all know that these things break down, and, you know. So the bottom line was...
Arafat,
you know,
because his name was Arafat.
Arafat, yeah. So they've got their half lots. Yeah, Yasser, yeah.
I actually remembered before I found the name. Right when I clicked on it, I found it. But,
yeah.
So this is the thing, again... It's maybe it's just part of the gaslighting, you know, like we don't know what really goes on and what's really who's being poisoned and who's not being poisoned. But it's pretty evident that they're using these nuclear poisons and these contaminants literally, like you know, before the show, you said something about, I asked you, what do you want to talk about? And you said World War III.
Oh, we'll get to that.
I think we still are. I think we're in World War III, frankly. I think it's going on right now, and they just haven't told us. We're on a need-to-know basis, and we don't need to know.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's quite interesting. I mean, and then the other thing was, is, you know, that something that just sort of popped into my head is that, you know, this organophosphates. And the potash that they're, you know, and all the sort of materials that we're using for fertilizers and that, and the fact is that all this fertilizer is destroying the soil,
right?
You know, so it was up to 75% of the soil is under pressure of being ruined. I think there's certainly a large amount of the arable soil has been ruined because of factory farming, if you like, of the sort of big agricultural method, and using chemicals and that, as opposed to using organic stuff which revitalizes the soil. I mean, I find it very interesting with this conversation that Russia is one of the biggest exporters of organic food. They've really gone into organic food. They're not doing the kind of big agricultural thing. You know, I know China might be, but Russia has said nah, and it just makes me think. You know, what are if these chemicals are doing that to Skripal? If they can do that sort of thing, and they can blow up big buildings in America like with McVeigh did, then why the hell are we using it? And if it's ruining the soil, you know, why are we using it? Well, it's actually just a cheap, quick way of making food, and it makes the profit bigger. You know, they don't have to hire more people, you know, and then we've got loads of people unemployed. You know, they could be working on farms, picking stuff, you know, and making a wage, you know, and feeling a bit good about themselves, you know, as opposed to, you know, sort of scrapping around trying to get, you know, from one week to the next to sort of make a living, or you know, not at all. So, but anyway, that's beside the point, you know. I suppose if I was to sort of say,
I don't know if it is beside the point, Sean. I think it's part of it.
I think
it's the fundamental point of it all, right? Like, we're being poisoned, yeah. As Jerome calls us, we're the poisoned ones. This generation, yeah. We're the first generation that's realizing, like, oh my gosh, it's bad. It's not, and it's really, like, it's not just one thing. There's a bunch of stuff.
Sure. What have we been doing for the last 70 or 80 years? You know. But we're seeing the results in the soil.
You know, yeah. This is why I'm grateful that you do nuclearnews.net and you write these articles. And I'm grateful that you're willing to come on the show with me, because this information is vital for people just to be aware of it. It doesn't mean we're expecting people to come up with solutions, but I genuinely believe that the more we discuss this and make people aware of it, we will come to, I mean, I think our thoughts are things, so we can't really create a solution until we put our mind to it.
Sure. I mean, we've got the plastics and all the other issues as well, and they do kind of connect, because it's just, yes. You know, you've got corporations trying to make money, and they make money by, you know, doing what they're doing, and doing it as cheaply as possible with the biggest profit margin, you know. So it's kind of, you know, and I would have said, in fact, you know, Russia is going to probably have some of the best soils and the best food, yeah. You know, and there are other countries that also try to look after their soils, you know, but it's, you know, what's going to happen in the next 50 years. So, you know, never mind the climate or whatever, but so what else? So there was, I thought, well, what should I do? Because when I got to that point of my research, I thought, right, well, okay, the UK's big thing is that only the Russians could have made Novichok, right? And Theresa May said it was either the Russian government, it was Putin himself who brought the damn stuff, you know, went on a Sunday to Salisbury, one of the most CCTV places on the planet, because there's loads of military stuff in and around the town. I mean, Porton Down, the biggest chemical warfare and biological and nuclear warfare place, is 8 miles. For those in kilometers, that would be about 15 kilometers away, you know, like a 5 mile drive or whatever, 5 minute, 10 minute
That's
drive.
Like nothing.
Yeah. And from their house. All right. Wow. So, there is cameras. You cannot walk around there without CCTV cameras looking after all the military buildings and keeping an eye on that whole town, in fact, and all the surrounding roads, you know. And anyway, but so somebody's gone up to the door, smeared the door, right? They've got neighbors and everything, but on a Sunday afternoon or morning, you know, when there's nobody about, has gone, drove in there, you know, and the thing is, if it was, say, one of the diplomats that they sent off, they wouldn't have sent the diplomats off, would they? They'd have basically got the evidence, got the photo evidence of the guy who turned up and did the job, you know, these spy that did it, the FSB, trained FSB agent that did it, and he would be one of the diplomats that they sent to Russia. So it's not that they, because the diplomat would have immunity, you'd have thought, I mean, okay, maybe they sent somebody else, but they would have a picture of the guy. Do you know what I mean? And they'd have a registration of the car. So it's just, you know, things don't seem to gel with me on this one. But anyway, what do I know? So basically,
this is the thing. I get it, because everything is suspicious. We are totally getting it, that we really don't. We can only put the pieces together. But it doesn't mean that the story is incorrect or parts of, I think more likely it's parts of the story is correct, and that's what they're hanging on to. Like they have shreds of the truth enwrapped around a whole pack of lies to serve a political agenda.
This gets so deep. I mean, what I did, I decided I'll bugger it. Now I said, like, okay, so who would want to do this? Who would be really up for doing
right,
this?
That was my question.
And who would benefit the most?
Yeah.
Who would seriously benefit? And I thought, well, who hates Russia more than America and the UK? And you know, it had to be Ukraine. You know, it was either ISIS or Ukraine, right? It's one of those, the enemies of Russia, the that kind of thing.
You mean to set them up and make it look like Russia did it?
Possibly. So I thought, well, let's do that. So basically, I've already mentioned that there's 300,000 emigres from Russia, you know, and they're not all criminals, but I'm just saying that there'd be a fair few there that wouldn't want to go back to Russia, and they wouldn't like Putin because he kicked them out, or he might have even taken money off them and then kicked them out. In the case of Skripal, if Skripal had any money, he would have had his money taken away, and then he would have been, you know, when he was exchanged back to the UK or to the UK, he would have been living on a pension from MI6, which probably wouldn't be maybe as much as he'd earned in the 10 years that, you know, that kind of thing. So, but I think at the end of the day, you know, that's number one. So you've got your local emigres in the UK. And who don't like Putin and want to set him up. You've got Ukraine. And I thought, well, actually, I don't know a lot about the emigres and how many of them are dodgy and all this. So I just thought, well, let's look at Ukraine. You know, how would these emigres get this this stuff anyway? So what I thought was, let's look at Ukraine. And I found that Ukraine, there is, let's have a look. There is, if I might, okay. I'm just going to go to my source notes here. So, right. Yeah. So there's basically, there's an actual company called lushburyfertilizer.com, and they can get muriate of potash, ammonium sulfate, and these sort of things, you know, and they get products from Russia, Belarus, and Ukraine. All right, so we kind of ruled out Russia because Russia would have the military grade stuff. That's what they're saying. We could say Belarus, but why would Belarus want to cause trouble between Russia and the UK? Because they're kind of getting money from Russia, and they're getting money from Europe, you know, from London, and you know, for the contamination and also because they want to, you know, both those countries want to get a foothold in Belarus. In the case of Europe, they want to do the same thing in Belarus that happened in Ukraine. But in Belarus, they've got a dictator, so it's much more difficult. And he's playing one against the other, being a bit clever. So it didn't strike me that Belarus would be the place. But Ukraine, I mean, you know, okay. I thought, well, okay, it sounds like Ukraine might be one to look at. You know, if it wasn't Russia, it could be Ukraine. So basically, I was looking at it, and where is it? Yeah. So the next thing was okay. If it's Ukraine, then I'll go off to the OSCE and see what they say about Ukraine and chemical safety and things. So there was a report done in 2017 that found that in Ukraine there was really bad safety, transport, and all this.
I saw a story about that. I was reading that when you called. Mishandling of spent nuclear fuel caused radioactivity in Russia. May have caused to spread across Europe, that one.
Well, no, actually, this was actually to do specifically with chemicals. So we're talking about, chemical weapons, or not so much chemical weapons, but sort of chemicals that they use for a range of things, which would include the things that you would need to make this particular stuff.
I get it. Right? I get it. Yeah.
As opposed to the nuclear stuff. I'm not touching on that at the moment.
Yeah.
But we're talking about the chemical stuff. And there's certainly issues in Ukraine, but actually Bologna and people like that are working in Ukraine.
The poisoning that they use, this actual, like this, this is actually a chemical poisoning.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So I looked at the OSCE, and they actually did a study in Ukraine about the laboratories, transportation, border controls, and things like this. And they found that the border controls were bad, the transportation was bad, the laboratory security and safety was bad. It had to be improved. And they drew up a 3-4 year plan. It was a 3-year plan, basically, to put all these things in place. And the USA and the EU put the money, were funding it, are funding it, I should say, because it's ongoing as we speak. So, and that's to get them in line with UNSCR 1540 of 2004, they've basically contributed a lot of money to Ukraine to do this. Of course, Ukraine's a really dodgy place at the moment. You know, it's very corrupt.
There's a lot going on there. There's war. You know, a lot of things that are not good and people doing a lot of.
And the words that they used, they said, in particular, this decision aims at reducing the threat posed by the illicit trade of controlled and toxic chemicals in the OSCE region. So they're saying that in Ukraine, they want to sort that problem out. And so in particular in Ukraine, thus promoting peace and security in the Union's neighborhood. And I got that from a European legal website.
So we have about 7 minutes left. I thought I'd just throw that in.
Okay, well, I'll just finish off then with this bit then. I did mention, obviously, that on the 13th of March 2018, about 10 days after the actual attack, that what was his name? He was called. Give me a second. Yeah, the Ukrainian Foreign Minister Pavel Kimkin said. The UK is investigating, of course. It will bring it. Because I had to translate it from Ukrainian. The UK is investigating, of course. It will bring it until the end. Forget that bit. It is already known that the poisoning was due to chemicals that were developed in Russia. We are in solidarity with Britain. If they need our help, expert or other, we will provide it. The minister said to journalists on Tuesday in Kiev. That was the 13th of March. So maybe it was actually a little bit before the 13th of March he said that. That's the point anyway. And I think, you know, when we look at that, I just thought that was quite interesting to find that, because the Ukrainians have enough experience with it to be able to help the UK. And the UK has got Porton down and with all the testing and everything else. But the Ukrainians, and of course, why would they do that? Well, because the Ukraine, just before Operation Desert Storm, the first Iraq war, Ukrainian battalion, an NBC battalion, basically went to Kuwait to protect Kuwait and, from any chemical weapons. Right. And that was from 2003, obviously. So isn't that interesting? But anyway, there was one other story. There was one other story which is worth very quickly mentioning, because we're nearly there. There was also, and I think this is a bit disinfo-y myself. But anyway, there's a retired French officer. Police security officer, and he said that he reckons he knows how Alexander Levenko was assassinated, and he says that the polonium 210 could only come from Russia, but it was in fact actually smuggled out of Russia to some Chechens which are against Putin, and then came in through Italy and was put in a glass vase and wrapped in paper, which made it completely safe. And then was transported to the UK and blah, blah, blah. That's what he said. And then he was also talking about Skripal, and he was really talking about all the dodgy buggers there.
Who is this that you're referring to?
Is a guy called Paul Barrel. He was a French GIGN officer, Paul Barrel. And it's Paul, obviously, P-A-U-L, B-A-R-I-L-L. And there is actually a video online. It goes on for it's an interview with him for 18 minutes. Now, I'm not sure, because he was saying that only the polonium 210 could only come from the only place that makes it is in Russia, and of course we know that's not the case. You know, we know that it can be made chemically. It can be
I think it says that it's the largest manufacturer of it, or the largest.
But you only need a very small amount, and as Chris said, you know, if you've got a bit of know-how and you've got some old radium tubes, you know, the things that you see on the internet, people show these glowy things and the radium dials and that, you could actually make polonium.
But this is the insane part. See, this is where I always drive it back home to this. It's the nuclear denial. We cannot sustain this. This is just as insane. It's part of the nuclear denial, denying these chemical attacks. John Goffman said it's not just nuclear, it's the chemical and a nuclear, all the technologists. If the technologists do not manage their waste adequately, certainly it will destroy our environment.
And for sure. And also, coming back to World War III, you know, when we've got all this bluster and what have you going on, and we had an airplane that was boarded by either the police or the security services, and they were trying to kick all the staff off. They locked the captain in the cabin, and then they were searching the plane for some reason. And that's actually against international law. But basically,
when did that happen?
That was in London, I think, Friday. Yeah, it would have been Friday. So, and all these other things that are going on with all the expulsions and things like this. And, you know, it only takes, how long does it take to send the missiles flying? Just one little mistake. Just one little mistake. And it would be, half hour to 40 minutes. And most of the cities where most of the people live would be flattened.
Well, it doesn't have to be all over the world.
They were saying that if India and Pakistan threw something like 10 or 20 missiles on major cities, which would create a huge amount of dust, that'd be enough to really finish the planet off, because you'd just end up with nuclear winter.
On that happy note, we've got about a minute and a half left, Sean. That is like unbelievable.
Well, actually, funny you should say a minute and a half. That's about half the time a nuclear missile, you know, from a would take to hit me here in Ireland if they decided to send one up in the Atlantic there, you know, minute and a half.
From where?
So by the time you actually stop this podcast and say goodbye to everyone, you know, I could be blown up by a nuclear weapon, except for the fact that Ireland is a neutral country, of course. So
where would it be directed from?
Well, I don't know. They've got submarines, haven't they? So they can get pretty close.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, look, thank you for joining us, Sean. You've been listening to Sean McGee of nuclearnews.net. Editor, I strongly recommend that you follow that online newspaper regularly, and please do contribute to their efforts. They're extremely valuable. Thanks, Sean, for joining us. I hope you'll come back again next month or so, because this is a pretty late night interview for me, so I apologize if I have sort of wandered off here and there, but I have thoroughly enjoyed this interview. Thank you so much.
No, good stuff. Make sure that you put Novichok in the title of the podcast. You might get a few more clicks.
definitely will. And then,
but they blocked the article anyway on Google, so you couldn't find the article on Google.
It's the Google monsters. Put your courage feet on, you guys. Take some action. We get to face this, and then we get to figure it out. So I guess we'll talk with you soon. Take care.
All right.
Bye, Sean.
Bye.